We've been thinking through different trends that we've been seeing interconnected with other people. And one of the things we've been noticing is kind of a trend that's kind of strange when you think about it. You know, we teach a bunch in this fellowship, rightly so, that we live in close community. We believe in the one another passages. We believe in good koinonia and closeness, friendships, and we have this, and we enjoy it. However, we teach this, we talk about it, we read it in our Bibles, and yet there's kind of this burgeoning phenomenon that can happen where you run into times as individuals, if you walk with Christ, where you're surrounded by other believers and even friends, and yet you don't feel known by them. You're with people, and we see them multiple times a week. Others, we live with them, and we're spending all this time together, and yet we don't feel known. We feel lonely, alienated. And we teach about Christian community and friendships and love, and yet we feel lonely. And the question is, why could that be the case? That sense of alienation from other believers. Which brings us to our topic for tonight. Maybe one of the biggest pressing needs for us as individuals is that we need to help other people to understand what we're going through. That it isn't enough that I'm just depending on people to pursue me or expecting my friendships to somehow, you know, resolve something, but actually the onus, the responsibility is on the believer to open up with other people. And there could be a lack of this, a paucity of people that actually are thinking to themselves when they're going through a hard time, you know, why is it that I'm lonely? Why is it that I'm alienated? It could be that they don't realize that the responsibility is really on you, the individual, to help people understand what it is that you're going through. Expecting them to pursue you and to figure you out, when really it's that you have to share with them and open up with them. This seems pretty abstract, and you might be like, I don't follow. You know, that's not my experience at all. It could be, actually. You start to think of some of these life changes that we go through. For example, you get a career for the first time. And you go from, you know, going to school, where if you want to call off, all you have to do is hit the snooze button. And if you don't want to show up for school that day, you just don't have to, okay? You might flunk your class. There's consequences, okay? It's not good. Then you get into a career, and you realize, I got to be up at 7 a.m. or I'm fired. And there's a certain level where going from school, even working, into a career, all of a sudden that changes things. Or you think about marriage. Wow, things really change when you get married. All of a sudden, you're waking up next to this strange person, and they're waking up next to you, having the same feelings, and you're realizing, you know, man, I thought I knew how to relate. I thought I knew how to build good friendships, and yet I'm looking at this person, and I'm realizing that there's a bankruptcy here. And many of us run into problems in marriage. Things don't really change that much until you have kids, which I know for most of us, that's not the case. But this is on the way, and I hope this talk tonight will haunt you. That you will think back to this, and remember, when you start to have some of those little kids running around, you know, you're going to be going through these changes. Am I proactively trying to get people to understand what it is that I'm going through? Or is it that I just expect that people just have some kind of telepathy or ESP, that they're able to see what it is to go through these big life changes? Health issues. You know, people go through this chronic pain, back pain. It could be debilitating pain where people just don't get it. And they look at you and they're like, you got some kind of an attitude. What's wrong with you? And you haven't shared with them the pain that you're in, what you're going through. Mental issues. Once you get out of adolescence, which is the age of 24, actually, your brain has ceased developing. And this is where some of these mental issues start to show up, where they weren't there before. And all of a sudden, this is where some of these diagnoses come in that you didn't see them before. For me, it was when I hit the age of 30. And I woke up, I was a nervous wreck, I had incredible anxiety. I called up my dad on the phone, I was like, hey, I'm going through incredible, crippling anxiety. I'm supposed to be a sphere leader here. I'm supposed to not be anxious for anything, and here I am. And my dad says, how old are you? I said, 30. He said, 30 was when I went through crippling anxiety as well. I thought, shit. Emotional problems. You're going through depression. Various issues. I'm sure I don't need to argue this. You know what I'm talking about, where you start to see, you know, things where it used to be I was down for a couple days, now I'm down for a couple weeks. And this is becoming an issue, and I'm expecting other people somehow to know this. When, how could they? How could they know? Personal struggles, you know, usually when we think about opening up to other people, we're thinking about sin. This really hasn't been talking about sin, has it? I suppose each of these could turn into sin. But maybe just those besetting sins that, okay, I have certain sins in my life. I've had to go back to my peers with my head in my hands over and over and just, I got to repent about this again. And it cropped up again. They didn't know. They had no idea. Seeing loved ones hurting, going through grief. Seeing people that you love, family members, friends, they're in pain, they're suffering. They're dying, and we're just expecting other people to know what that's like. And very often people in this situation, they kind of had this attitude, it's kind of like this. It's like, I want you to talk to me, I want the help, at the same time I'm going to judge everything you say. And so this can be very difficult for people. So you could see, this is very germane to our ministry, where this can come up, and it will come up. It is coming up. And as we talk to people, we see that this is a major issue where we talk to people and we're like, there's all this conflict. Have you opened up about this? Well, no, I haven't done that. Why should I? Well, I can think of a number of reasons. For one, we could call this maybe like an understanding gap. So when I'm going through one of these life changes or struggles or issues, there's a gap between what I know, what I'm feeling, and what my brother or sister in Christ can grasp about this, they don't know. And there is a true gap there. We could think about it like this. The understanding gap chart. You think about issues like career, marriage, kids, health problems, emotional problems, struggling with personal issues. Think about it like this. Let's take kids, okay? Young couple in the home church has kids. And then you have a single person in the home church who's never had kids, and all of a sudden there's a new baby. And there's an increasing knowledge gap between those two people, isn't there? As a single man, I just kick myself with the stupid things I would say to my buddy who was having a newborn boy, a little boy. I didn't know. I didn't know what it was like. And so the dialogue could go something like this. You know, the single dude goes up to the mother and he says, you know, there's something I wanted to talk to you about. Since you've had this baby, you seem kind of disengaged lately. You seem kind of out of it. Mother retorts with a silent, judging stare. She says, actually, I don't think you realize what it's like to have kids. He retorts, well, no, I don't have kids, but you seem really out of it. And then he throws on the Christian phrase, and I really care about you. Okay. To which she retorts, well, it would be helpful if you didn't jump to conclusions when I'm having such a hard time. Now, of course, this is a fictional dialogue. Of course, none of us would ever do this. But what happened there? He's trying to move in to help, and actually the helping is hurting. And so now that understanding gap has actually increased, where he was trying to move toward her, and she actually took a step back. Let's go for round two. Hey, sorry about what I said last week. You know, I've been thinking about that. I just wanted to offer my help. You know, maybe I can babysit your newborn infant. Would that help? The mother's like, actually, no. Newborns need to feed every couple hours. They're constantly crapping all the time, and I don't think you know how to handle that. What just happened? She shut him down. He was trying to help. And so now he's like, whoa, now I actually tried to help. And that gap has increased even further. Round three, he comes in. Hey, I really tried to offer you help the other day and you shut me down. You seem like you're just being too proud to ask for help. I think that's what this is. And she says, I can't believe you're bringing this up again. I need support right now, not criticism from you. To which he replies, I offered to support you, but you wouldn't accept it. To which she replies, you offered to breastfeed my child. So what just happened? That knowledge gap just increased. And so now we're in the dark. It's a shot in the dark. I don't know how to help. I've tried. She shut me down multiple times. And so what is this guy thinking at this point? Man, she's really losing it after having kids. And what is she thinking to herself? How am I going to get some support as a new parent? Nobody understands. It's because we're lobbing these imperatives or help blindly. We don't know what we're doing. And on the other hand, the person here who I think is most responsible is the parent. Because she hasn't articulated, look, I see what you're trying to do. This is actually what's most helpful. So, that's just parenting. But think about all these other stages of life. Somebody gets a career and all of a sudden they can't stay out until, 2:30 in the morning to take a road trip to Cincinnati for God knows what reason you would ever go to that city. And the rest of the guys there are like, what is with you? You're kind of turning soft. It's, dude, I got to get up and work. Or marriage, why are you guys so different all of a sudden? Graduating, school, depression, any one of these, there could be that gap where we're trying to help each other, but there's a gap. And again, the onus, the responsibility is not just on the person to draw out the person who's hurting. It's also on the person who's hurting to make this known to the people who are trying to help. Why should we do this? Why is it that I should try and initiate with other people and to help them understand what it is I'm going through? Well, what happens is you can think of this like pressure, that these emotional buildups lead to emotional blowups. Something like this, like you imagine like blowing up a balloon. That's the best illustration I can think of here. And with each one of these confrontations, it's like blowing more air into this balloon until it's getting even harder and harder and harder until eventually it's just almost impossible and just... Kaboom! All right. And it pops. And so if we keep building up this pressure, no one gets it. No one understands. I'm so lonely. I'm so alienated. It's like blowing air into that balloon, where eventually this thing is just going to explode all over everybody. And this is where you see people lose it, because they have these meltdowns, these blow-ups. For some people, it's outward. For other people, it's inward. It's something that happens in the heart, where they just shut down. And it's like you're talking to a different person. When we have mutual understanding, when I try and come to you and try and actually share, this is what I'm going through. Again, we're not just talking about sin here. That's what we always think. It's just, dude, I'm in this life stage. It's difficult. When we do that, it's almost like we're letting air out of the balloon. So it'd be something like this here.
People, violence this time.
Okay. Kind of embarrassing. It's like somewhere between a trombone and a fart. I don't know what it sounds like. And it's embarrassing. It's humbling to have to come to a person and you've been blowing up this balloon and you have to let out these emotional farts on people. It's embarrassing. It sounds ugly. You feel like you're squealing. And yet this is the only way to relieve this pressure. Is when we start to actually share, this is what I'm going through. You don't have the full picture. When we do this, suddenly other people aren't trying to breastfeed your child. Now they actually know what's going to help. You know what we need? We need a clean room in the ministry house. That's what we need. We need a lock on the door so one of the brothers doesn't walk in on my wife while she's breastfeeding. We could use this, we could use that, or, you know, you're working and you're saying, hey, this is what I'm going through. I'm in the first 6 months of my career. It's stressful. Would you pray for me? Do you think you could keep it down after midnight? Marriage, you know, do you think you could help me in this area, that area? Now people actually know what to pray for. I remember sitting in tears when I got this diagnosis for my voice. It's a permanent condition where I have these muscle spasms in my voice, and I realized this could be it for vocational ministry. It's about 2 years ago. I don't know if you know what that's like, where you feel like God has called you to something, God is using you, and just to sit there and just weep tears of agony to feel like I'm out. He's pulled me out. I don't know why. And I remember it was my wife. She said, we need to talk to people about this. And I was just like, no way. They're not going to get it. They're not going to understand. And one of the things she said was, we need people to pray for us. And that stuck with me. Next week, I showed up to the elders and I said, I need some prayer for this. And opened up more and more. And all of a sudden, people started to realize why I was such a basket case, why I was losing it, is because I had received this news from the doctor that I was in bad shape. And all of a sudden, I started getting prayer. And then all of a sudden, we got some help, medical help. False beliefs when it comes to this? Well, others should draw me out. Isn't that what the Proverbs say? That, you know, a man's intentions are like deep waters, and where the wise man's able to draw them out. True. That's very true. This is a provision from God. This is like their mail, okay? I don't open up your mail and read it. This is the mail for that person, and they read their letter. Okay, I'm supposed to draw you out, okay? This isn't your mail. This isn't sitting there with expectation, oh, everyone should be here in this whole room to draw me out all the time. People aren't mind readers. They need to see some movement from you to open up, and then all of a sudden they can start to help you work through and navigate. Other people say, well, other people around me just aren't good listeners. No one. There isn't a single listener you could talk to about this. That's a load of crap. That's not true. There's someone you could go to talk about this. There are good listeners. You just haven't found them, or you don't want to find them. You don't want the help. Other people say, well, you know, I would open up about this issue, but, you know, what am I going to do? Talk about my job, my career with somebody who's just starting school, somebody who's immature? First of all, let me rebuke you. That is a completely self-righteous statement right there. That is the eye saying to the ear, I have no need of you. That's what that is. And you'd be very surprised. I talk to my guys about my marriage. Usually they sit there like a cow looking at a new fence. You know? They don't know what to say. That's okay. But they pray for me. Or they say, wait a minute, how'd that story go? Like this. See, that kind of sounds like you. That's what you would do in that situation. And maybe you need to go back and fix that. And, there's some people that, I wouldn't open up with. I don't feel like this is something we open up with everybody about, especially seriously intimate issues. Those would be intimate friends. I'm talking about for 90% of what we're going through, we should be opening up about this. Jesus certainly did it. He was, a little bit more mature than his disciples, and he would do it. And it's interesting, you read through the Gospels, just how much the disciples blow it over and over. So Jesus says, Matthew 16, watch out and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And the disciples began to discuss this among themselves. They're like, all right, he said leaven, Pharisees, Sadducees. What's he talking about? He said that because we did not bring any bread. Okay, that was their conclusion. The leaven, they thought leaven meant bread. And Jesus is like, how is it that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread? But beware of he doesn't even change it. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And then they understood what he did not say to beware of the leaven of the bread. It wasn't bread. It was the teaching of the Pharisees. Okay, that makes sense now. Thank you. And so basically what Jesus did was he said it. They didn't get it. And he went back. He said it again until it stuck. And sometimes we're going to go in there with immature people. And we're going to say it, and they're going to be like, well, I just think you need to read your word more. And we're going to be like, okay, let me say it again. And this, you know, I got something more to share here. How about Matthew 26:36? Jesus went with them to Gethsemane. This is right before he's about to be killed, last night of his life. And he said, sit here while I go over there to pray. He took Peter, James, and John. So these are his most mature disciples, the inner three. And he became anguished and distressed. How about that? Here were these immature guys, and he just opens up right in front of them with the anguish and the pain. And he told them, my soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Would you just stay here with me? Would you pray with me? Here's Jesus at his wit's end. It says he's sweating as if it was drops of blood. And he opens up his soul to these men, immature men. Well, he goes off and he prays. He comes back and the disciples were asleep. They're sitting there sleeping. Jesus said to Peter, couldn't you watch with me for even 1 hour? Jesus left them. He went and prayed a second time, and then he came back. And when he returned again, they're sleeping again. Well, he goes to pray a third time and he comes back. And what are they doing? Sleeping again. Why did he keep going to return to them? If they're asleep, why did he have to keep coming back? He kept coming back to give them the opportunity to serve him. That's what he was doing. In Luke's version, it says that an angel ministered to Jesus right there. Apparently, he couldn't get this from his guys, but he kept going back to try. So eventually, he just gives up. He says, okay, go ahead and get some sleep. Have your rest. But look, the time has come. The Son of Man is betrayed. And apparently, at that point, they're like, okay, now it's time to pay attention. How about the Corinthian church? There was so much animosity with Paul in this church. Distrust. Talk about some immature people. People that could use what you say against you. Paul had enemies in this church. People that didn't like him. There was factions. They would try and use things against Paul. And how does he open up his second letter to him? He says, we do not want you to be unaware of our affliction, which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life. You don't think that Paul's enemies in Corinth could have lifted that out of context and say, see, Paul's a weakling. They were attacking him. Oh, yeah, he talks to them a big game, and then he comes and shows up, and he's a real weakling. His speech is unimpressive. His physical appearance is contemptuous. And Paul, right from the beginning, is just opening up his heart. We went through terrible affliction. We couldn't even handle it. 1 Thessalonians 2:8, he says, we loved you so much that we shared with you not only the good news about God, but also our own lives. This was a church, you know, some people say, well, I couldn't share it with them. This was the church that Paul had only served for 2 or 3 months, tops. And even these new believers, he was able to open up and to share his life with them, the deepest parts. Other people say, well, you know, I built intimacy before, but those people took off and they burned me. Boy, have I been there. You pour into people, you love people, and then they turn right around and they burn you. Here's the question to consider, which the Lord has put to me on multiple occasions. Okay, so person A burned me. Okay. So now, person B shows up. They've never hurt me. In fact, they seem like they really want to grow with God. Am I going to punish person B for what person A did to me? Am I going to be held hostage by how that person hurt me so that I can't love other people again? That's what you're saying. This is a self-protective attitude. This is not being willing to open up your heart again, to close your heart. And really what you're saying is, I want that other person to control my life. Some people say, well, they just wouldn't understand. That's precisely my point. That's the point. Of course they don't understand. No, they don't understand unless you help them to understand. So how we help others understand? First, what we want to do here is to pray, you know, Psalm 139, that you'd pray that the Lord would reveal what you're thinking and what you're feeling. I've had such a hard time with this over the years. You know, sometimes people will be like, so, whoa, that happened. How are you feeling about that? I'm like, I don't know. It's just a complete numbness. And to sit with the Lord and say, Lord, okay, this has happened. That was pretty major. This happened. That was major. This other thing happened. And to say to the Lord, how do I feel about that? And to say to him, how do you feel about that? And to start to try and have something in your heart that you're prepared to share. When I show up on the fly and someone is trying to get real deep and emotional with me, when they turn toward me, I kind of turn away. I don't know if you're like that. It's usually when they just sit next to me that I kind of turn toward. And that's usually when I open up because I've thought about it. I've got something to share. One option is you can kind of test drive with people that you feel like you could have a good chance of success. So your spouse, if you're married, would be a good person. Your closest friends. You don't want to set yourself up for failure here because it is hard. It's very difficult to try and explain this to people and then they don't get it. Try and pick out one or two people that you feel like, I think this could work here. Start with your closest friendships. When that starts to work, then you can start to bridge out into other people. You have to persist even when other people aren't loving you the way that you want them to. It could be that you start to open up about this and all of a sudden they're on their phone. And you have to pause and realize, okay, that was a sin. They sinned against me. I'm trying to open up here. I'm going to overlook that. And I'm going to get their attention. And I'm going to say, hey, I got to tell you, I got something really important. It's almost like taking their face and going, hey, I need you to listen. Would you listen to me? And not be hypercritical of how people are reciprocating, but be very easy to please. And when they try and love you poorly, you're trying to actually help them to respond the way that they should in these kind of situations. Be patient. This could take some time. It could take time for other people. It could also take time, more importantly, for you. To learn how to do this is actually pretty difficult. To open up about my life, what I'm going through. And it could take time, maybe let out a little bit at a time. And all of a sudden you start to discover this becomes pretty natural. And when you meet up with your friendships, it feels pretty good. Okay, now let's shift gears. How can we be the kind of people that understand others? So now we're reading your mail. That's our mail. Now what about the other people? You want to ask good questions like this. How are you doing? Bad, bad question. Terrible question. How are you doing? That's what I say to a stranger. How's it going? Good. All right. And you keep walking. How about this question? Something really serious happens. How have you been feeling lately? Awful. Bad question. Terrible question. Somebody asked that to me. How have you been feeling about that? What's the answer you're going to get? Okay. Or for men, it's usually frustrated, angry, or tired. One of those three isn't even an emotion. How are you feeling lately? That's just lazy. That's all it is. It's lazy. How are you feeling lately? That means you really didn't think about how to approach this. What's new, brah? Terrible question to ask. What's new, brah? I didn't know how to spell brah. Is that good? I didn't want to spell like brassiere, but brah, okay. Okay, here's some good questions. I think these could be helpful. What has been hard for you to talk about lately? That's kind of a difficult question not to answer because it's basically saying not how are you feeling about this. It's what's been hard to talk about. And all of a sudden you'll see people go, ooh, wow, I didn't see that coming. And they have to pause and give them time to think. That's okay. What is one thing that you haven't shared that's been on your mind about this? You know, maybe you're talking through an issue and you run up against a roadblock and you feel like I can't seem to really get deeper with this person. When you think about this, is there something you just haven't shared that's on your heart that you'd want to open up about? Gives people the freedom to do that. Has your blank been difficult to talk about lately? Has your depression been hard to talk about lately? Has your anxiety been hard to talk about lately? Has your career, has your family, your marriage, has that been hard to talk about? How about instead of saying, how are you feeling? You say, okay, you just went through that. You know, if I was in your shoes, I'd be feeling pretty lonely. Is that how you're feeling? That's way more proactive. It's lazy to say, how are you feeling? All right. It's way better to say, I think, to empathize, I'd be feeling this way. Now, the person might come back and say, no, I haven't felt lonely. But it's going to jumpstart them to say what they are feeling. And so it isn't putting words in their mouth. It's, I'm trying to empathize. Am I on the right track? Do I hear you? We want to be able to discern signs that people are holding back. When you do the arithmetic with discernment, you're trying to see, okay, this major thing happened, and then this major thing happened with this person, and then this other major thing happened, and yet they're all smiles. Okay, A plus B plus C, that is not adding up. In fact, you don't add letters at all. You add numbers. But, okay, that plus this, this is not adding up. Something must be wrong here. People who are really, you know, sarcastic all the time. People who are really always talking about things that are functional, not really that important. Distracting. Whenever you try and go personal, they leave the room. All of a sudden, our discernment radar should be going off here and seeing there's something we're not seeing here, and to be able to dig deeper. Well, the whole point for tonight, okay, to take one thing away is this. The point is not to justify how people are improperly loving you. Like, well, somebody just said to me the other day, how are you feeling? And James said that was wrong and lazy. That's not the point. I say that every day, all right? How you feeling about that? How you doing? What's up, bro? I've never said that in my life, but you get the idea, right? That's not the point. I would hate to hear you walk out of here and then all of a sudden you're a Pharisee on how people are approaching you. And you don't love people that way anyways, so you're imperfect too. The responsibility is on you to help people to understand, to open up your heart, to try and get people to grasp, instead of sitting there nitpicking and judging the crap out of everybody about how they're treating you, realizing they don't know what I'm going through. And whose fault is that? Mine, because I won't talk about it. That's why. We don't want to wait until that balloon is reaching hot air proportions and it's about to explode. We want to be able to reach this at a point where we see, okay, I'm starting to feel the pressure building up and I'm seeing people aren't getting this. They're not connecting. This is my time to speak up. So, could be the case as you're sitting here tonight that something popped into your mind. That there's an area of your life where you feel like, you know, I really haven't been forthright about this. Or an area where you feel like, I just don't feel like people get this. And I haven't explained it. I haven't put it into words. It could be possible that the Holy Spirit is prompting you to pull somebody aside here tonight and just say to them, hey, can you listen? Very often I have to do that. I have to tell my friends a couple months ago. I sat down with my friends. I said, hey, can you give me about 20 minutes? I just need to lay out everything that's happening. And then I want to have your input. Or sometimes you might be like, I just need to share. I don't want input right now. I want it later. But could you pray for me? If somebody opens up to you like this, one of the best things you can do is just sit there and listen. I had a friend, I used to open up to him, and older believer. I would share and share and share and this and that and the other thing, and he would just sit there and stare out the window. And I was like, he isn't listening to me. And I'd be like, hey, dude, what do you think I should do? And he would go, I don't know. I'll have to pray about it. What? You know, a very wise man. And then a week later, he'd come in and he'd go, I was thinking about this more, this, that, the other thing. And I'd be like, whoa, so happy he prayed about that for me. He actually had something good to share. And so if you're here tonight and you feel that prompting, the rest of the night is free. You could pull somebody aside to talk about this with them.